thank Keshava for Prabhu, because I think that was today's class. He was supposed to give it, so it's kind of him to allow me to give it. I hope he won't regret it. So we're reading from the 11th canto, chapter 4, and he wanted me to read from text 12 to 17. There's a few purports to that. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. How should we proceed? Should I chant and then read, and then we'll chant together text 17, or okay, maybe we'll do that. So text 12, the incarnation of Godhead.
Iti pragninatam te sham striyot yad buddha darshana darshayam asha shushusham swarchitta kurvatir vibhu.
While the demigod was thus praising the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Lord suddenly manifested before their eyes many women who were astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine cloths and ornaments, and all faithfully engaging in the Lord's service. Purport. Of course, these are purports by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Lord Naranarayan showed his causeless mercy towards the demigods by relieving them of their false prestige. Although the demigods were proud of their personal beauty and female companions, the Lord showed that he was already being adequately served by innumerable gorgeous females, each of whom was far more beautiful than any female companion imagined by the demigods. The Lord manifested such uniquely attractive women to his own mystic potency. Text 13. Te devanuchara drisva sriya shrir iva rupini gandena mumuhushtasam rupodarya hata shriya. When the followers of the demigods gazed upon the fascinating mystic beauty of the woman created by Narayan Rishi and smelled the fragrance of their bodies, the minds of these followers became bewildered. Indeed, upon seeing the beauty and magnificence of such women, the representatives of the demigods were completely diminished in their own opulence. Text 14. Tanaha deva devesha pranatam prahasamiva asam ekat namam savarnam swargabhushanam. The Supreme Lord of Lords then smiled slightly and told the representatives of heaven who were bowing down before him, please choose one of these women, whomever you find suitable for you. She will become an ornament of the heavenly planets. Purport. Narayan Rishi was almost laughing upon seeing the defeat of the demigods. However, being extremely grave, he did not actually laugh. Although the demigods might have thought, we are simply low-class fools in comparison to these women. The Lord encouraged them to choose one of the women, whomever they considered equal in character to themselves. The beauty thus selected would become the ornament of heaven. Text 15. Om mitya desham adaya nadvam tvam suravandina urvasim atsara srishtam. Vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the servants of the demigod selected Urvasi, the best of the apsaras. Placing her in front of them out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets. Text 16. Indraya namayam sadisi srinvatam trisivokasam purcho narayana balam sakratatrasavvishmita. The servants of the demigods reached the assembly of Indra, and thus, while all the residents of the three heavens listened, they explained to Indra the supreme power of Narayan. When Indra heard of Naranarayan Rishi and became aware of his offense, he was both frightened and astonished. Text 17.
Amsa Swarupya Vada Auchata Atma Yogam. Data Kumara Rishabo Bhagavan Pitana. Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirnas. Tena Rita Madhubida Shrutayo Hayasye.
Chant. Ladies. We can sing together, it's not a problem. We'll do the word for word. Amsa Swarupi. Assuming his eternal form of the swan incarnation. Avadat, he spoke. Achyuta, the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atmo Yogam, self-realization. Dita, Dattatreya. Kumara, the Kumara's brothers, headed by Sanaka, Rishabha, Rishabdev, Bhagavan, the Lord, Pita, Father, Na, Ara, Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, Shivaya, for the welfare, Jagatam, of all the world, Palaya, by his secondary personal expansions. Avatirna, descending to this world, Tena, by him, Arita, who brought back from the depths of Patalaloka. Madhubida, by the killing of the demon Madhu. Shrutaya, the original text of the Vedas. Aya Asye, the horse-headed incarnation. Translation, the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, had descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hamsa, the swan, Dattatreya, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Rishabdev. By such incarnations, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearance as Hayagriva, he killed the demon Madhu and thus brought the Vedas back from the hellish planet Patalaloka. Purport, it is stated in the Skanda Purana that the Lord of the universe, Hari himself, once appeared in the form of a young brahmachari named Kumara and spoke transcendental knowledge to Sanat Kumara. Om Ajnanate Mirandasya Gyananjana Sharakaya Chakshur Unimitam Yunatasmayam Shri Gurudhan Namaha. So, we'll go back to text 12. Here we see that Naranarayan was very merciful, as described here, to remove the false prestige of the demigods, or the assistance of the demigods themselves, but the assistance of the demigods, who we can understand are, to some extent, of the same beauty and same opulence as the demigods. And here we see that they were very proud of the fact of bringing their beautiful companions, their wives. And this is the nature of the material world. The material world is a place where everyone's very much proud, or even proud. Prabhupada said that even a pauper is proud of his penny. This is the nature of the material world because prakriti priyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimudatma kartahani tvanyati. The living entity thinks that he's a doer of everything. His false ego is ahankara. He thinks that I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But actually everything is done by nature in conjunction with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's actually nothing to be proud of. And we're discussing these particular verses and we're hearing about, you know, renunciation, austerity, detachment, tapasya, and so forth. But actually these are all conditions of the living entity. It's just like when you break your arm after a while because your arm hasn't been functioning. When you remove the cast, you have to go through physiotherapy. There's different exercises you have to do and it's very painful because you haven't been using your arm. Naturally, it's very easy to move your arm, but because now it's been in the cast for so long, it seems very difficult. So the living entity, because of his conditioning, he thinks there's so much austerity and difficulty to take and renunciation, but what is there to renounce? Nothing belongs to us. We're born naked and we'll die. I think the Christians, they say, ashes you are and ashes you'll become, because at the time of death, you burn the body, nothing it remains. So, out of false ego, we start thinking that this belongs to us. We go to the moon, we plant a flag there, and we say, okay, this is America. And that pride, and it's in every country. I'm from Canada, so in Canada, you see a lot of things made in Canada, we're very proud. And then you'll see things more made in America and by American or by Canadian. You know, this whole mentality is there, you know, that somehow because I'm born here, it's number one, it's the greatest. And all over the world, people think like that. And we're pushed to think in that way. But this is actually demoniac mentality to think, because it enhances the bodily identification. So here the demigods, although they themselves are not demoniac, sometimes they become proud of their situation. And we see Indra always being proud. He's a Sakama devotee. He gets so much pride of so many things. Recently, we celebrated Govardhan Puja, which is another pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And we see how Indra becomes very proud. And he sends so much torrents of rain. And he gets defeated by Krishna because Krishna just lifts a little hill and defeats him. And here, is the same thing. Indra is becoming worried about Narayana Rishi performing great austerity tapasya, so he sends these personalities with their wives to try to defeat him. And this is a very powerful, the beauty, feminine beauty is a very powerful thing. We hear of so many, histories of, personalities being defeated by such beauty. And of course, in the material world, we see this. We see whenever you go to any, like if you go to Hitchcock, or Chmore, is it Hitchmore or Hitchcock? Hitchcock. You see always magazines and reviews when you're at the cashier. They've got tons of these magazines showing all sorts of beautiful women and so forth and so on. Of course, the beauty of this material world fades very quickly. They never show women 50, past 50, just young women, because the beauty is doesn't last very long. In the heavenly planets, of course, we can imagine, just understand, that the women are very, very beautiful there. It describes how just their walking, flowers blossoms at their feet. And so the demigods were very proud. They thought, we're going to conquer this personality. We're going to defeat his tapasya, his austerity. But of course, they didn't know that Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nara, being human, is sometimes described as being Arjuna. And Nara, of course, is Narayana, Krishna and Arjuna. there's no way that one can defeat the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We see even Arjuna in the Battle of Kurukshetra was not defeated. He had Krishna on the chariot, and he was very happy to have Krishna. Although Duryodhana took all the Krishna's army, the Vishnis, he was thinking, okay, I'll have all these personalities, and I'll be able to defeat the Pandavas. But Arjuna was simply happy to have Krishna. And even though Krishna said, I will not fight. So Arjuna requested Krishna, then you just drive my chariot. And still, Arjuna was able to defeat him. So here, we see also that Narayana Rishi, he is not upset, he's not disturbed, he's actually a little humored by the situation. He's described that he's almost laughing at them. The foolish people don't know who I am. Like sometimes the adults, they see children doing things, and for them it's very important, someone took their toy or whatever, and for them it's such a dramatic thing, but for the adults it's insignificant. So it's the same here. Narayana it's an insignificant thing. They have got these beautiful women, but he will show them. Sometimes you say, what's the expression? I'll show you your own medicine. Do you have that expression here? A taste of your own medicine. So this is a little bit what Narayana Rishi is doing. He's giving them a taste of their own medicine. He's manifesting so many more beautiful women, even more beautiful than they can even understand or imagine. And we know this in the Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakara Sanma Salka Vriksha, that Lakshmi Sahasya, Sata. So Sahasya Sata means hundreds of millions of goddesses of fortune. The Lord is served by hundreds and millions of goddesses of fortune. So for him to manifest a few other female forms, very insignificant. That those female forms are so beautiful that they bewildered the demigods themselves, or the servants of the demigods. They became bewildered just seeing this. And we also know that the Lord also assumed the form of a female, as Mohini Murti. So when the demigods were fighting with the demons, and they churned the nectar of the ocean and got the nectar of immortality, then the demons were trying to get a hold of that. So the Lord appeared and bewildered all the demons and told them, "No, you should give this the nectar first. Let the demigods drink first. They're a bunch of sissies, they're always crying and lamenting. Let them take the nectar first." So he even bewildered Lord Shiva. When Lord Shiva heard of this, he wanted to see this form of Mohini Murti. And he even, although he's known as Dhira, very sober personality, and in the presence of his own wife, Parvati, he became bewildered and enticed by the beauty of Mohini. So this pastimes helps us understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be conquered. We give the example of the spider. The spider creates a web, but the spider never gets caught in its own web. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead never gets caught or illusioned by his own creation. He's always above that creation, and he can always bewilder all living entities. Now, this incarnation of Naranarayan also demonstrates that the living entity is never separate from Krishna. That although in some illusion we may think that we're separated from the Lord, but actually the Lord is always present. Even in the conditioned state, the living entity, Krishna is there as a super soul, the Paramatma, the Atma and Paramatma. So there's never a question of being independent of the Lord. The Lord is always there. And here, Nara, being the best, described in the 12th canto, being the best of the human beings, and Nara being the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So here we see that the demigods, they're going to bow down, they're bowing down to the Lord, accepting defeat, and the Lord, in a charming way, is telling them, then just take one of these. Bring one back. So you can show to all of them my mystic power. And they decide to choose Urvasi. Now, Urva means heart, and Vasi means to conquer. So her beauty was so much more than even all the denizens of heaven that they were so bewildered by her that they put her forward, you know, as an ornament. Just like when you have a nice necklace or some nice jewel, you put it in front of you. You don't put it in the back. You want everyone to see this beautiful ornament. So Urvasi was like that. She was so beautiful, she became the ornament of the demigods. But there's another little pastime with Urvasi. When Arjuna went to the heavenly planets to see his father, Lord Indra, Urvasi noticed Arjuna, and she was very much enticed by his beauty. So she tried to seduce Arjuna, but Arjuna refused. He said, no, I just see you as my mother. So she was very much insulted at that, that there's just a human being could refuse me, you know. So she cursed Arjuna and to become a eunuch. And we know the pastime that when they were in exile, this aided Arjuna in his disguise with King Videha. He was able to teach Videha's daughter, Uttara, in that disguise. They, of course, all the Pandavas took different, they took shelter there of the King of Videha, and they all had different disguise. So Arjuna, it aided into his 1 year of exile where they had to be, you know, not discovered. Duryodhana was running everywhere with his spies trying to find where they were. So that was like the last year. Then they could come out after that. So this was something that... But Arjuna was so powerful, he was able to overcome this, the beauty of Urvashi, because he had taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is our process. It describes that if one can overcome the attraction, the allurement of course, the female for the male and the male for the female, that attraction, that Bali attraction, gives one, he's like 50% of his way back to Godhead. Brahma, he's almost Brahma unrealized. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. There's no hankering and lamenting. And we see in the material world, what is the hankering, what is lamenting? People are hankering for the wife or the beauty or the love they had, and they're lamenting that they lost that, and they're hankering for that love that they never had. But they don't realize that there's an entanglement in that. We say there's a, when you get married, there's three rings. You know this. There's actually three rings when you get married. There's the engagement ring, there's the wedding ring, and then there's the suffering. Uh, As Prabhupada said, king for a day, slave for a lifetime. I'm sorry. When we were, as young brahmacharis, we had the opportunity to be in Atlanta, and Prabhupada preached to us that young brahmacharis is like this, so if you remain brahmachari and distribute books, then 90% of your chance of going back to Godhead. And so if you get married, then 25%. And avoid all marriage, avoid all headaches, don't get married. So, anyway, at the same time, we do allow everyone to get married if they so required. And here it is described how other incarnations in the text 17, other incarnations are there. The Hamsa incarnation, the swan, Dattatreya, Kumaras. Kumaras, we know, there's a Sampradaya of the Kumaras, the Nimbarka Sampradaya, like we're the Brahma Sampradaya, and there's the Lakshmi Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya, and the Rudra Sampradaya. And here it describes our father, the mighty Rishabhdev. So the servants of Indra went back to Indra and announced to everybody what had taken place, how they had gotten defeated by Narayan Rishi, and how actually he was the Supreme Lord. And Indra becomes a little bit frightened of the insult or the offense, as he normally is. Indra is always getting himself into trouble. When Markandeya was also performing great austerity, he did similar thing. He also sent some apsara to try to bewilder him and defeat him. So he's always in that state of anxiety. Although he's the king of heaven, he's always feels himself threatened. And this is, again, the position of people in the material world. Although they have so much opulence, they have so many things, they're always fearful that they may lose. A man may have a very beautiful wife, but he's always in anxiety because that wife can take off with anybody. She can leave because there's so many men after her. And it's not such a great thing to be very beautiful because the men, all so many men are lusting after that person. So, and she always has to keep that beauty going. So it's an anxiety. Everyone in the material world is constantly in anxiety. Kunta, full of anxiety, not Vaikunta. There's always so much anxiety because actually nothing belongs to us. It all belongs to the Supreme Lord. And deep down we know that. We're trying to hoard and keep all sorts of things. And we fool ourselves thinking, oh, I will remain youthful by dyeing my hair, by, inject some buttock in my face, so the wrinkles won't show. And so, but no one can fool Yamaraj. When it's time to go, it's time to go. One may look very young or very... So, it's a problem. The material world is a problem place. And if we can understand the implication... These different pastimes help us understand the implications of the dealing with the material world, how nothing is permanent. And even though one may be beautiful or have some wealth or knowledge, there's always someone who has more beauty, more wealth, more knowledge. There's always someone, and therefore one is always in competition, trying to be number one, trying to be the best. But the devotee is relieved of all that. He's relieved of that pride, that anxiety, because he knows that I don't have to be number one. Krishna, there's always someone who's number one, and that's Krishna. And I can be a servant. And Gopi Bhartam Parakamala Dasa 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 Anudas, that I don't have to be number one next to Krishna. I don't have to be Arjuna. I don't have to be Radharani. I can be the servant of the servant of the servant of those personalities. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes how Radharani enjoys, is it 10,000 or 25,000 times more than Krishna? But those who serve Radharani enjoy more than her, and like that. So in the spiritual world, there's no diminution. Everything is always anandam buddhi vardhanam. It's always increasing. In the material world, we have to struggle so hard to keep things going, to maintain the status quo. We live in a very opulent country, America, Canada, but the energy required to maintain the structure that we've created, the infrastructure, all the sewage system and the roads and, you know, everything. There's no pleasure tearing it down and there's no pleasure building it up. It's just constant frustration, endeavor, working hard. And people, because they don't have any understanding of the spirit soul, then they think that's all in all. They work very hard. Prabhupada was thinking it very foolish that people don't believe in the next life, reincarnation, but they're very concerned about their children. Oh no, we have to save the planet because, you know, the next generation, or we have to, you know, do this or do that, you know, because our children, but you're going to be dead. What connection will you have once you're dead? But if you talk to them about reincarnation, oh no, that is too much. They're not concerned. You would think they'd be more concerned that you're going to reincarnate and, you know, you better improve your existence rather than trying to improve your environment. People are very concerned about, you know, the environment and so forth. And, you know, if you were to give someone a glass of water and there's even a little grain of sand or dust in it, they'll say, oh, I can't drink this. You know, they want filtered water, purified water. But no one is concerned about purifying their consciousness. They hear all sorts of trash, all sorts of nonsense. They never filter what they hear. That they don't take into consideration that will pollute your consciousness, will pollute your mind. There's no awareness of that. But they're very much aware that water has to be clean and the air should be clean and that. So the devotees, we're trying to clarify, purify our consciousness. We're trying to purify our minds through the sound vibration, through hearing, transcendental sound vibration, purified sound vibration, hearing wonderful pastimes of the Lord and so forth. And therefore, we'll become purified, our consciousness, and therefore everything else will become pure. Our actions, our desires, our motivation, everything will become purified. But the materialists, they have no such notion. So the Lord here describes how he constantly incarnates. You cannot count how many incarnations there are. They're like the waves of the ocean. There's so many. Of course, the Bhagavatam describes the main incarnations, but there are so many other incarnations. And the purpose for all those incarnations is to save the conditioned soul from himself, from his degraded state. So sometimes the Lord sets examples, like Lord Ram. Sometimes he gives knowledge, like Lord Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita, or other incarnations like Rishabhdev, telling that he considered a person to act in a way that has already entangled him. We acted in such a way that now we're entangled in the material world. So if you act again in the same way, then that's very foolish. Because again, we'll become entangled. Just like you take a gum, you chew it, there's no more juice, you put it aside, and the next morning you pick it up, start chewing it again, hoping that there'll be some juice or some flavor, but the flavor has already been taken out. You can chew all you want, nothing will be there. So the Lord is always very much concerned about the living entities, and he makes all sorts of arrangements by which a living entity can progress spiritually. And by hearing these wonderful pastimes, hearing these activities of the Lord, we become inspired, we become purified. And sometimes devotees think, well, I don't have a great memory, I'm not that scholarly, I have a poor memory, so I have a hard time remembering verses and so forth and so on. So there was one disciple who approached his guru in that way. He was saying that he had a hard time memorizing, remembering so many things. So he wanted to know from his guru what he should do. So the guru said, well, before I can answer this, you have to do one task for me. The disciple said, yes. You take this straw basket and you go to the river and you fill it up and bring back the water. So the disciple was a little bit bewildered, but he didn't want to contradict his guru. So he went to the river. Faithfully thought maybe by some mystic power that the basket would just hold all the water. But as soon as he filled up the basket and lifted it out of the water, all the water drained. So he said, okay, I'll try again. Tried again. Again, all the water drained out of the basket. So he tried a third time. Again. So he was thinking, maybe I'm not that sincere. Maybe, you know, there's something wrong with me and so forth. So he went back to his guru and explained that, Guru Maharaj, this is not working. The basket is not holding the water. The guru said, okay, but what has happened to the basket? Well, the only thing I can see, it got clean. He said, yes. So if you read, if you chant, then you will get clean. Your heart will get clean. That's just the process. Chaitodarpanamarginam, that like Chaitanya said, Chaitodarpanamarginam, Bhava Mahagadhyayamapanam, that by taking to this process, the heart will be cleansed. And this is what we're attempting to do. We want to clean our heart so that at the time of death, we're not absorbed in all these materialistic things and attracted by all sorts of things, but we can be attracted and drawn to Lord Krishna's lotus feet. So, it's a short class, I guess. I'll stop here. And I'll let some of you ask questions, if you do have some. Yes.
You know, you were talking about Srila Prabhupada's mentioning of remaining brahmachari and be happy that way. Once there was an Indian man, the way he would greet people, he would ask them, are you happy or are you married? So anyway, I have heard this, you know, this concept like hundreds of times about, you know, quoting Srila Prabhupada talking about, or just remain brahmachari and or take sannyas. But I've never heard any devotee explain. You know, like, so my question to you is that, are we talking only about the men to remain like that, or what about the woman? Or if men remain single, are they, can the woman remain single and be just as strong and develop, or what's their situation?
Well, one time Srila Prabhupada said that all men should remain single and all women should be married. So they said to Prabhupada, that's impossible. He said, that's management. In other words, it's an impossible thing to manage. Well, we know Kalosudrasambhava, that in the age of Kali, you know, we're not all very advanced. So I always describe brahmacharya life as the life where you're rowing, you know, you're rowing the boat, but the anchor is still in the water. So sometimes when you realize that, then you got to lift the anchor, you got to untie the boat. So that's grihastha life, where you may not be so much, it may not be so apparent that you're rowing, you may not be, you know, capable of attending all the morning programs and reading as much, and, you know, doing full-time sankirtan because you have other responsibilities. But the purpose is the same. You're untying the boat. So if you keep, you can keep rowing, but if the boat is tied down, you're not going to go very far. So one has to be honest with himself. And, you know, we're trying to approach the absolute truth. So we have to be truthful with ourselves. We can't take it. And they're all ashrams. So they're all meant to purify ourselves. Not, one is not better than another. In the story of Gajendra, Prabhupada describes that depending on your psychic, your mental state, then you're fighting the war. You can fight, like he compares it in the army, that sometimes some will fight in the air, in the on the navy, or the underwater, in the submarines, or on land. So, but they're all fighting the war. It's just a different strategy. So it's not that sannyas life is better than grihastha, grihastha is better than brahmacharya. No, it's all ashrams that are meant to facilitate you to make progress. And sometimes Prabhupada would give sannyas to someone and tell them, now nothing has changed. You know, there's an opportunity, there's an occasion for you to make progress if you take advantage of it. So grihastha life is not grihamedi. It's meant, it's a process to make us become stronger and advanced. So it's not something to be humiliated about. One time when Srila Prabhupada came to Toronto, there were many brahmacharis, and the president, Vishwakarma, was a brahmachari. But some of them were, you know, they'd been brahmachari a few years, and we started to think about maybe getting married. So Vishwakarma Ashula Prabhupada. Is it true that when the brahmachari gets married, it's a fall down? And Prabhupada said, where's the question of falling when you're at the bottom of the well? So, you know, we're not very advanced. That's the reality. We're trying to be advanced. We're trying to become attached. And for most of us, you know, coming from the backgrounds that we've come and the things we've done prior to meeting Srila Prabhupada and so forth, of course, nothing to be proud about, but it has entangled us. And one time Sadhguru Maharaj was, I was told, he was in front of a store window, and they were looking at, with Prabhupada, they were on the morning walk, and they were looking at stuff, and Sadhguru Maharaj told Prabhupada, you know, when we were young, you know, we were playing with toys and ladies with dolls and, you know, Mickey Mouse and all sorts of crazy things that we, you know, cartoons and stuff that we watched. And Prabhupada said, yes, and that will mark you the rest of your life, you know. So these things, although we're forgetting, they're still there, you know. I mean, we all know Mickey Mouse, we all know Bugs Bunny, we all know these silly things, they're there, you know. So it's a little bit like you've had a cut, and although it's healed, there's a scar there indicating that you were cut at one point, you know, something happened. So that's that. Prabhupada, when he was young, he was, you know, doing Ratiyatra and worshipping Radha and Krishna, and that's his childhood memory. And maybe some of the children who are born here are fortunate, because the other day I was just thinking how, you know, seeing the little Gurukulis and students, you know, they're looking at Radha Shyama Sundar, and what impression must it be, you know, when you're a young kid, everything is so amazing and impressive, you know, so they're seeing Krishna, Radha and Krishna there, Radha Shyama Sundar, must be, and they'll grow up, you know, with coming here, and so that's very fortunate for them, you know. But for us, it may be a different story. So, ahaitike pritiyata, woman, I don't know, I don't think they necessarily need to be married, and the men don't need to be married, but if it happens, well, make the best use of it. One time this devotee approached Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, what should I do? My wife is more advanced than me. Prabhupada said, then follow your wife. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, yeah, sometimes you may have a wife that is very inspiring. She's very dedicated. She's, you know, so that's nice. If one can have such a wife that is inspired in Krishna consciousness and doing service, and it can be an impediment. It can be an impediment, but an inspiration for Krishna consciousness. So we try to use whatever we have to try to make progress in Krishna consciousness. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but other questions or comments? Yes.
Can you explain why a grihasthas on the bottom of the well? Because the rules and regulations are the same for all the ashrams. So if everybody actually follows the rules and regulations, how are you on the bottom of the well? Because you have even more challenge to live next to a beautiful young wife, and you don't have any kind of physical relationship. You're just serving. So it seems there is more of a challenge, there's more of a purification in a sense as a grihastha than the other ashrams that are free to travel, free to do. So you're kind of more in that spiritual flow of activities, and as a grihastha, you do all the duties, plus you don't really enjoy the, you know, the opposite sex.
Well, that's the ideal case. It may not always be there. A person may not always follow the principles as a grihastha. But at least he is committed to one person, and gradually he will make that progress if that's not his case. Of course, Prabhupada said that grihastha, you know, that marriage is not a license for prostitution. So we try to have everyone be grihastha and not grihamiti. But there is that tendency, that possibility, you know. Because one is surrounded by facility, So it's considered, in one sense, a fall down because there is distraction. Prabhupada used to always say that man is good, woman is good, together it's bad. Because it does entangle the living entity. You know, you need a house, and you need to work, and you need a car. And so many things need to be added, which take away your, or can take away, if one is not determined enough, to your chanting and your reading. There's less time because you have to take care of all these other responsibilities that were not necessarily required. If you remain single, life is much simpler. But if you get married, then there's children and so forth. But Prabhupada did call this the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and society means women. Otherwise, it's a monastery. Society means you're a woman, and then you'll have children and all the requirements that come along with that. So for sure, brahmacharya and sannyas life is a more simple life. But we're all working together. Sometimes, you know, neophytes may look at different things and but in reality, we're all working together. And each ashram has its strength and its weaknesses. So, the grihasthas, their strength is they're the aspect of society, like the stomach of society, that can generate funds. You know, we're always looking for donations. We're always, the sannyasis are always looking for donations to travel and to do their preaching and so forth and so on. So there's a requirement there. If we're going to distribute books, someone has to pay for those books. And sometimes you get donations on the street, but in the old days, I remember we used to do Sankirtan, we had to pay for the books, we had to pay for the mortgage, we had to pay, you know, so many things were added on to the books. So you needed, you know, a book would cost $3, but you had to get 10 because you had to consider paying all the other things that the temple expenses. So that diminished the ability of the brahmacharis to distribute more books if you have to get so much more money. But if you have a solid grihastha foundation base, then they can generate income and liberate the financial burden of the brahmacharis and sannyasis, where they can do more preaching. And if the sannyasis, brahmacharis, and grihasthas work, you know, conjointly together, then they can mutually appreciate each other, because the sannyasi and brahmachari realize, I don't have to be worried about money, I can just preach. And there are other people who have, they're in a situation where they can generate the money, and therefore I'm indebted to them, because they're doing that austerity of working and generating money in whatever businesses and so forth, and having to deal with the material energy more than I have to. I can be a little bit more aloof. So in this way, each divisions or bodies of devotees can appreciate themselves. And then the grihastha, he can be more stimulated in generating money, you know, because he knows that he can now donate more for the temple, for the deity worship, for the preaching. So it's, you know, just to work and to maintain, it's not that inspiring. But if one works and knows that I'm involved in the preaching in that way, then it can be very inspiring for the grihasthas to generate more income, to go beyond their needs, so that they can facilitate others who are going on the front line. And of course, everyone can go on the front line, and sometimes sannyasis and brahmacharis can generate income also. It's not a strict principle, but generally speaking, the grihasthas are the ones who generate the revenues. They're working. So in that way, everything's in conjunction. But coming back to your point, is that the grihasthas are, it's more of an entangling situation. And if one is not strong enough, we see sometimes the grihasthas, they lose their determination. They come back from work, they're tired, they've got rounds to chant, or they're chanting when they're driving, so forth and so on. They can't come to the morning program because they have to get early and run to work, you know, be at work at 7 in the morning and so forth and drive there. So it diminishes their ability to have a very powerful sadhana. So it's more entangling in that sense. Any more questions or some comments? That's good.
always remember. Krishna accepts mental devotional service, like the Brahmin who put his finger mentally into the hot sweet rice and it was burned. So, you know, the fact of the situation is that married life is entangling. It may be like you've got a huge sumo wrestler sitting on top of you, and you can't really move. But in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter because it's your intention. And, you know, we accept our nature. We accept our situation. That's step one. And then we know that we're different from that situation. And, you know, just the intention and the desire to perform devotional service is accepted by Krishna, and it's enough.
Mm. Yes. But it's a scale in the sense that, you know, it may seem that you're outweighed, you know, you've got more weight on one side, your Krishna consciousness, you're working at trying to, you know, change that scale where your material attachments and attraction becomes diminished and your spiritual attraction. And while that's taking place, you have to be stable. Your mind can't just be taken off everywhere and be distracted by things. So you want to stabilize yourself. In the Grihastha Ashram, you stable, you know, you find your comfort in that. So now you're comfortable. You know, it's like the child is crying. You give him the toy and he's playing, he's happy. He stops crying. He stops, you know, creating a disturbance. So one may be disturbed. He finds a wife. He settles down, he's happy, he's not disturbing every woman and everything and running around and being irresponsible. And that attachment, that responsibility is important because it's part of giving yourself. We're very selfish. We like to get everything for ourselves. But the Grihastha Ashram, you learn that it's a giving. I have to give to my wife, I have to give to my children. And as one progresses, he loses that selfishness. And as he progresses more, ultimately a sannyasi is meant to give everyone. Sannyasi is not someone who just enjoys comforts, you know, is waiting for the mahaplate. But he's learned that to be detached. He has no desire for himself, and therefore he can offer himself to the whole world. But that is learned in, well, one, not the only ashram, but one ashram that's learned in the Grihastha Ashram. That one thinks, oh, I'll get married, I'll get served. But that's not the reality. Eventually, it helps you to learn that actually I'm a servant. And I don't mind serving my wife because she's a Vaishnavi, she's a devotee of Krishna. So if you see her as a material object, then it'll be frustrating because you'll think, okay, she's supposed to be serving me. But if you see her as a devotee of Krishna, then it's very easy to want to serve because she's a devotee. So she'll assist me and I'll assist her and serving, ultimately serving who? Serving Krishna. So it becomes very natural, but it depends on the mindset, how we, you know, everything, like you say, everything's based on the mind. Desires, you know, are there. We have desires and then they sprung up in the mind. We're thinking and then we're feeling and then we're willing. So the desires are there and then you start thinking. You know, how am I going to execute that? But if the desires have become purified, then one becomes disentangled because he doesn't see the wife as the extension of his sense gratification, but he sees the wife as a companion in devotional service. And that, when one comes to that realization, then it makes a very strong couple. If you look at couples around, you'll see those who are very strong couples are the ones who have gotten that realization. That we're both devotees trying to serve Krishna. And that may not be there in the beginning. In the beginning, one may just be attracted to the beauty of that person and the handsomeness of this person and so forth. And we're thinking this person's going to fulfill my desires. And the other person's thinking, no, he's going to fulfill my desires. And no, she's going to fulfill. And sometimes there's a fighting because we feel that, hey, I'm not getting the extent of what I'm giving. I'm giving so much and I'm not getting a reciprocation here. Therefore, I'm kind of feel cheated in the relationship. But love really means to give. So as one progresses in the relationship and matures, he starts realizing that I'm with a partner here, and we're both working together to try to serve Krishna. So when Hanuman took, he had taken sannyas, and he was, I think, the first sannyas to fall down, and he came to LA. And he had gone to South America, and he preached, and somehow he got married, and he came to LA. And in the Bhagavatam, it said, Prabhupada said, the one who is a sannyasi and falls down is like eating his own vomit. So devotees were spitting on the ground when they saw him, disgusting, he fell down. And so he went to see Prabhupada, and he told Prabhupada, I think I should commit suicide. Prabhupada said, no, 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 don't worry about it. Now there's two of you, so serve Krishna. So although Prabhupada would write things, when it came down to issues, Prabhupada would always be very compassionate and give a better understanding that now there's two of you, so both of you serve Krishna. Don't get distracted and just serve Krishna. Yes, Madam.
I was remembering that when the tape ministry was going on, and there was a tape that came out from Hawaii, and it was called Krishna Kanti. Labeled them. It was called Independent Householder Life. Remember the tape? And it was Rameshwar, at the time was a sannyasi, and he was asking Prabhupada, he says, Prabhupada, the householders say they can chant Hare Krishna and do everything, do anything. He says, so Prabhupada said, yes, what is your opinion? He says, well, unless they're in a temple and they're going on book distribution, and then they're not going to make any advancement. And Prabhupada said, what is the meaning of the 10 types of offenses? And that was how he answered. He said that if they're not committing offenses, it's a fact, you do whatever you're doing. It's not that you do sinful activities. But if someone can chant the holy name, that's the focus, without making offenses, because everything that we're doing is to help us chant Hare Krishna properly and go back to Godhead in the strength of pleasing spiritual master chanting 16 minutes. So that was just one point, because it was the other thing was that was kind of just humorous in part of that conversation. They said that a householder, they think that Brahmacharis think if you're a householder, then you're fallen. So Prabhupada said, generally, but not necessary.
Well, the bottom line is we're all in it together. We're all trying to make progress and serve Krishna, and we have to take advantage of each other's situation. We're much, you know, and there's no divide. There's a competition between one group or another. Everyone has to decide what they need and make progress. But we're all working towards the same goal. Were you going to make a comment for me? With the, no? Okay. So we'll stop here. Rosh Shilatapa, thank you very much.